If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Docker into the penalty area, it's in towards Lampard, right footed shot, brilliant save by Brad Friedel.
It's Muller bringing it forward, lovely reverse ball, crosses in again, great save David James with his right leg. That's a save that might just have kept England in the World Cup.
Valencia trying to attack the Chelsea goal, comes back to Welbeck, decent ball, here's Hernandez.
What a save!
Oh,
the save of the season!
Immobile, brilliant save again by Courtois.
Ball is in by Orr towards Cahill. This time it's Bresciano. That is a brilliant save and a double save by Claudio Bravo.
Delivered towards the edge of the six-yard box. Nastasic down, then headed towards goal. What a save towards his right by Lloris.
This is position A for Gareth Bale. 26 yards out, left-footed over the wall, and it's brilliantly saved by McGovern.
And Nani tries another long shot, which strikes the post, and Howard produces a miracle save from the follow-up shot by Ader. Unbelievable stop that was.
Being a goalkeeper gives you quite a unique perspective on things. You are part of a team, yet somehow separate. There are no grey areas, with success or failure being measured in real time. And you have a physical job, which you can only do well by paying attention to your mental well-being. A great goalkeeper has to have the keys to a great mindset. To be able to work well in the box, I believe you have to be able to think outside the box. Those are not my words, but the words of Brad Friedel, a former US and Liverpool goalkeeper, but it defines perfectly well the complexities of being a goalie. They wear different clothes. It is the only footballer that can touch the ball with his hands, has got different rules to everybody else. But what is it? Do goalkeepers need an element of insanity, as Oliver Kahn said, suggesting that you are a born goalkeeper? Or, in the words of Gianluigi Buffon, one of the greats in goal, you score goals as a kid, then you grow up stupid and become a goalkeeper. We have brought to the studios of TalkSport two experienced and successful goalkeepers, Bournemouth's and Bosnia's international Asmi Begovic and Tony Ann Wayne, the number one at Spurs ladies. We will also listen to Barcelona's Marc-Andre Ter Stegen and Spurs' Hugo Lloris talking about how to overcome mistakes and why they became goalies. This is Inside Football, a special edition about goalkeepers.
John Obi Mikel holds the ball up on the left-hand side, squares it here. Powerful shot just wide of the left-hand post from Emenike. Begovic down to his left, and it's gone wide.
And now Snodgrass, who turns away from Wilson, curls it brilliantly. What a save from Begovic to pull that ball clear at full stretch.
Right-footed ball in. Fabulous save as Cabella comes in and just glances it off his head. And it's a fabulous save by Begovic.
Did you train today?
I did, actually. Two sessions today.
Just the two?
Yeah, gym session and then outfield sessions.
All right, in the outfield session, how many times did you dive?
Do you know what? That's a good question. I didn't count. I should check my stats. I could find out for you, but...
Does that... They put that in the stats?
Yeah, everything. Yeah, our loads are measured every single day.
100?
Yeah, maybe close to 100, yeah.
100. Did you train today, Tony Ann?
I've got training tonight, so I'll be coming straight from here to training this evening. Same, I will do a goalkeeper session followed by our gym session afterwards.
So you work and train, is that how it goes?
I do, yeah.
And
yeah.
You train at the end of the day when, I guess, the training ground, fantastic training ground you've got at Spurs, is what, empty or...?
Yeah, so we train on a Monday, Wednesday and a Thursday evening. I'll go straight after work, stay a little bit later at work. And the academy boys will train till about 8 o'clock and then we're in afterwards. So, yeah, pretty much when it's silent and we're the only ones there.
And when your body and mind is probably saying, this is the end of the night, feet up, television, do you have to struggle? You have to struggle with your mind sometimes?
In the winter, yeah. Yeah, that's... My biggest tip is I stay at work, because if I was to go home and it's cold outside and stuff like that, it's a lot more of a struggle once you're in a warm house to then go out again. So I will always stay at work and just go straight to training from work. But to be honest, I've done that all my life. And I'm an evening person, so the thought of getting up early and having to train in the morning is like a nightmare for me. I would rather just kind of drag myself into work and get myself woken up and then go to train in the evening, because it's what I know, it's what I've been doing for too many years. So.
How many times do you have to dive in training, Tony Ann?
It depends how particularly horrible my coach is feeling that day. yesterday, probably non-stop for about an hour and a half. So, and a lot of it was up, down stuff.
So you dive, you hold the ball with your hands, you dress different clothes. As you go into the training ground, everybody goes right and you go left, even though you probably will join with the piggies in the middles and the rondos and so on. So you are a different kind of breed. You ever felt like that? You feel like that?
Yeah, all the time. I think our profession is completely different to other players. I think the mindset is completely different. I actually don't know how we come together sometimes. I think, like you said, it's just that wanting to play and get the results as a team. But we are so different. And not many people understand us. You know, I don't think you can ever really understand a goalkeeper until you've been in their shoes, until you've seen a ball fired at you at certain miles an hour and having to deal with that. So with the pressures are different for us. So I think we approach our training sessions different. We have no room for error. You know, we strive for that perfection on a daily basis. And I don't think outfield players are quite the same, or not many of them are.
So you do feel different, but that is the part, the attraction that do you are different? Is that part of the attraction?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely love it. I don't think that there is any sort of relationship that you can really compare to a goalkeeper union. I think that it's one of those ones where, you know, obviously you always want to be that number one, but you look out for each other. It's like a mini family within another family. And obviously I don't know too much what it's like in for Azmir, but for us, we're kind of... our everyday life and stuff, we kind of confide in each other and stuff like that as well. So along with like the goalkeeper coach and stuff, but yeah, I love it. We are a different breed, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
Do you mix more with the goalkeepers than how it goes?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I've been lucky. I've had really good relationships with many goalkeepers. Never had any bad relationships where it's been naughty or anything like that. So we've always had a good goalkeeper group wherever I've been, and like Tony says, it's the union that does exist. It's that family that does exist. We are the ones that always get shoved in the corner. You work in the corner where everyone else uses the field, and then we get shoved to another corner after that, and you know, we get called and whistled over at any second's notice. And yeah, we do feel like an afterthought sometimes. That's just the way it is. That's the way sometimes the footballing culture is.
When you mix the rondos, the biggest in the middle, that circle of players with one or two in the middle, the friends I've got who are goalkeepers will tell me that they don't stay in the middle for long, because even though they're probably with their foot not as good as the rest, they tackle really badly.
Absolutely.
So they don't stay in the middle, because otherwise it'd be a little bit of a nightmare. You've been in those big in the middles. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I mean, we play the rondos regularly, so we get involved. Actually, we do our own little goalkeeper rondos too, so I think it's good for your general footwork and control the ball and comfort with the ball. So they do have their purpose. But when we are with the team, it's no prisoners. I mean, it's definitely no mercy. I mean, if I'm in the middle, it has to be as short-lived as possible. But that's always the joke, you know. It's always a joke. The two keepers are in. Even if the guys, you know, even if it's outfield players in the middle and they're getting played around, it's always, you know, always having to make fun of the goalkeepers. So that's why we have to return the favor sometimes.
Does it happen the same with you,
Tony? Yeah, our coach loves it, Juan. And he's got his own special one where you have to do 10 passes and then you pick it up and you have to clap. And if you don't clap, you have to go in, etc. And he's a bit strange, but I love going in. But when I get a bit bored, I just like dive at their feet. So and then they get scared and then they give me the ball. So again, it's short lived. But
good trick.
I love a tackle. So
you do have so much responsibility.
Yeah,
you cannot ignore when danger comes to you. You cannot ignore it. You have to deal with it. You cannot escape it. You cannot hide. So that's the kind of obligations and responsibilities that you have. Others.
Yeah, no, I think there's some really good characteristics to being a goalkeeper that can be translated into life as well. Like you said, first and foremost, the responsibility. As I touched earlier, we have no room for error. You know, an outfield player makes a bad pass, and I think, okay, no problem. It's a mistake, but I'll just get on and I'll get the ball back. Whereas if we make that same mistake, it's a goal, and you are on the firing line, and we're responsible for that, and we're responsible for the result. So there is certain characteristics, like I said, that are very important. It's a very humbling position. You know, it's a very mentally difficult position. So, you know, that's why, in general, I'm not saying because I'm a goalkeeper, I think we are the most responsible in a team. I feel like generally the most mature, because you have to deal with stuff at a very young age. And if you become a goalkeeper as the years go on, that means obviously you have to have a certain mental strength that keeps you going throughout the game. And, you know, we have to cope with stuff that other people don't. And, you know, the pressure is like that. We're in a position where if we make a save, that's expected of us. And if we make a mistake, it's costly. So that's...
You also have to deal with, and probably more so for you, when you're playing, and a lot of the time commentators are not goalkeepers, and they're like, oh, I should have saved that. And a lot of the time, I hear it sometimes when I hear the commentators, and I think, are you being realistic? Like, it's so different. It is literally like a whole different sport in its own. And it's true, it's almost like you have to babysit, and you do come off that pitch sometimes. You might have only touched it two or three times, but the reason why you have only touched it two or three times is because you've had to organise not just your back four, but your midfield and getting your strikers back, etc. as well. So a lot, like I said, mental strength is huge, and if you haven't got that mental ability, doesn't matter whether you are an outstanding goalkeeper, you won't make it.
Germany really stretching France, who defending zone now. Headed towards goal, what a save! That is one of the saves of the tournament. Hugo Lloris's save is out of the top draw. It's one of the best that I've seen for a long, long time.
You are listening to Inside Football, a goalkeeper special with Tony Ann Wayne and Asmi Begovic, plus special guests Marc-Andre ter Stegen and Hugo Lloris.
So we started to hearing that it's quite not only a special place in the pitch, it's a difficult one as well, of course. Let me read you from Shaka Hislop something he says, which kind of goes into the next question. It says, surely anyone with a capacity for logical thought would opt for a job less in the literal and metaphorical line of fire, the responsibility, the isolation, the criticism. Why not play in the hall and avoid the lot? So I want to hear from you why you became a goalkeeper, when I'm pretty sure that when you started you kind of sensed that there was something special about being a goalkeeper. But first, let's hear from ter Stegen, why he chose to be one.
I like to work in a goal. I like to get the strikers in a bad mood. I like to see them in a bad mood. So, I'm trying to save it all. It wasn't my dream at the beginning when you were young, and I was scoring goals. I was so happy. But I was happy when I was a goalkeeper in these opportunities I had. Then one day they asked me to go into the goal or leave the club. And my decision, and I was playing for Mönchengladbach, it was always my dream to play for it. And then I said, okay, I decided to go into the goal, even if it wasn't my my big dream at this time.
That's Barcelona's Marc-André ter Stegen. And now let's hear from Hugo Lloris why he decided to become a goalkeeper.
You know, I think a goalkeeper never used to be in the spotlight. And maybe this is what I like too, because I don't really like the spotlight. And goalkeeper needs to be humble, because the next game is always the most difficult. You cannot think too much about what you've done. You need always to look forward, and this is a bit my philosophy in life. So I'm really connected with my private life and my professional life.
So you're hearing a little bit of clues here why people decide to be a goalkeeper. One was a striker, but then he had to move on goal. And the other one, it feels like Hugo Lloris always wanted to be a goalie. So in your case, Tonya, why?
I was almost forced into it as well. So I was always played out on pitch, usually like number 10, number 9 when I was younger. And when I was probably about 13, our goalkeeper got injured. No one else would go in, so I went in and obviously done well and was kind of pushed to stay in goal. So, I was one of those strange creatures that always was like, well, I play half in goal and then can I come out on pitch, because I liked scoring goals. And I do that. I actually do that now in training as well. If we've got a few more goalkeepers, I'll go out on pitch, albeit nowhere near as good as the rest of them. But I understand that. I love the repetitiveness of the goalkeeping. I love having a session, and like some people, the players get frustrated when if they're doing the same thing for longer than like 5 minutes, they're like, oh, can we just move on to something else? For me, I love that. I love being able to try and perfect something and trying to take it into a game. For me, that's more beneficial, when I feel I progress more in that way rather than being that person that, you know, I make a save in like the 30th minute and we win 1-0. For me, if I've been working on my distribution and I'm able to nail that 90% out of 100 in the game, for me that's a win for that week, because that's what I've been working on.
So you love the process, but of course you found that there was a talent there that has to be worked on.
Yeah,
and that's the way to get to the top, isn't it? In your case, Asmi, your dad was a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
did that help? Or
yeah, I mean, for me, it was different, slightly different to Tony Ann. Obviously, it was natural for me. I started very early. My father was a goalkeeper. My grandfather was a goalkeeper, and at the age of 4 and 5, I just went in goal and never looked back. And it was never any thought on it, any other thought in my mind than to be a professional goalkeeper. From literally the age of 5, I was telling people that this is what I wanted to do. And
as a 5-year-old?
Yeah, it was never forced on me, and never anything. It was just natural. I went to the field and watched my dad, trained with him. He's my coach most of my life, and that's how it happened. And my younger brother's a goalkeeper, you know, so it's just sort of in the family, and nothing else happened. And obviously, as the years went on, and as you understand the craft and everything else, I embraced being a goalkeeper, embraced almost being the villain. I embrace the responsibilities, position, and everything that comes with it. And now, as you in the professional years, and as you get older, yeah, it's the process of what we do, the repetition of what we do every day that drives you and wants you to play this game and want to keep going. Because, like I said earlier about being a villain, it's, you know, most people pay to watch people score goals. Not many people pay to watch the goalkeepers make the save. So it's fun to be in that different position. And as Marc-André said, putting the face on strikers and make them angry and people angry. So that's how my life, that's my story. That's how I became a goalkeeper, and that's what I wanted to do and never anything else.
Is it true that your dad doesn't tell you very often, or hasn't told you very often, how good you are?
Yeah, that is true. That is true. Yeah,
does that work as a motivation?
I never used this motivation. I think it was good. My father was my toughest critic growing up, a difficult, you know, tough coach. He was really hard on me, and I think that's what made, like, you know, helps the goalkeeper be mentally strong. I think the game now, society now, sometimes become a little bit too soft, and I think kids didn't have the same drive. Obviously, I through life, through, you know, my family being moved from one country to another, to different continents, because of circumstances was part of that. But obviously, yeah, my father was tough on me, and I appreciate that. Now we have a years on now, we have an unbelievable relationship, and obviously we get on really well. And yeah, I always wanted to emulate my dad. I wanted to be him. And because I think he had that sort of an idol position in my mind, that's who I wanted to be, like my father, that drove me to become better and push myself. And that's what helped me. I wouldn't change it for anything. I think to come from the past that I came through in those circumstances to become a professional, you needed to be tough, and it wasn't going to be easy. And I think that's what I needed, and that's what helped me throughout the years.
Tony, have your parents come to see your games often?
Yeah, so same actually. My dad, my brother, my younger nephew, and my other younger nephew as well. They're all goalkeepers. And for me, I loved watching my dad play, and I used to go and watch him play every week and stuff. And that probably helped me when I was younger, because they would go out and play football and they'd throw me in goal again. They were frustrated strikers and they just used to pummel balls at me. So that probably did help me kind of going into it when I was older. But it was really my mum. So I think I was about 15, 16. I was currently playing for a youth team on like Colchester Ladies on a Saturday morning, playing 90 minutes with them and then going straight away and playing for a ladies team in the afternoon as well. And she actually got me two trials. She got me one at Fulham and she got me one at Arsenal. And I went to the Arsenal one, and that was when Vic Akers, who's the kit man at the men now, was the manager. And they offered me straight away to join them into their academy, which they'd only just started up that year, so that obviously is moving away from home, being at a college, etc. I then, the week after, went to Fulham, because my mum's one of these people, she said, look, she had absolutely love Arsenal, but we've made plans to go somewhere else as well, so we'll follow that through. And they actually told me I wasn't good enough, that I would never make it. 6 months later, I was in the under-18 squad for England, so it's always nice to prove people wrong. And I think sometimes as well, you have to be in the right place at the right time. But the biggest thing for me is my dad died a year ago, and he is a huge Tottenham fan. So for me to have my season that we had last year, we'd done the quadruple, that was perfect for me, because he was obviously proud of that. And that's something that you can always think of, being a huge Tottenham fan, that I know that it would have made him proud.
You've been touching on some of the characteristics that a goalkeeper needs to have. Mental strength is absolutely key. And I remember hearing the likes of Victor Valdés saying that every day in training, every day in a game, was a day to suffer, not a day to enjoy. And he dreamt of having another life. In fact, if he was going to play football, not being a goalkeeper at all, that it was that kind of suffering. Have you been there, or that mental strength that you need, you carry with you from the beginning, and you're comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think it makes a good point there. I mean, about suffering, I think obviously you have to, you know, like anyone who suffers physically, you have to put the work in to perform on a match day. And we work extra hard during the week. You know, our physical output might be less on a match day than outfield players and other people, but you know, our mental output is very, very high on a match day, and we have to do a lot of work to be physically ready for these games. And also, I think from suffering, you have to learn to get beat. You know, that's one of the key things. We can't stop everything. People are going to score goals, you know, and I don't think any other position on the field deals with that. You know, we have to understand that we are going to get beat. We're going to score down. Obviously, we want to try and minimize that, but yeah, there is that mental side to understand and come to terms with that as well.
Do you have to be eccentric, or is that just a myth?
I think you have to know what you want, and you need to know your team to be able to realise how to achieve that. I think that because you have to know your players. I've got some players at my team now where my centre-backs, I can absolutely go for them and have a go at them if something happens, and they'll be like, yep, okay. But then my right-back is probably a little bit more sensitive, and I have to go away, like, again, like I was saying, babysit. You have to go a certain way to kind of get the best out of them. So yeah, I think you have that responsibility, don't you? I think with the players, they, without being horrible to the players, they're very much themselves. We have to think of everyone else. We train, you know, stupid amount of hours, hundreds of dives, like all the time, for that, maybe that one shot in a game. But everything else that we do is having to organise everyone else, knowing their personalities, knowing their traits, working out, you know, what sort of mood they're in a game, or how am I going to deal with them today in a game, whereas the players will just think about, what do I need to do today? So we have that huge responsibility to manage the team as such on the pitch. We then become that second captain as such, to be able to try and get the best out of them of what we can, judging on their moods on the day.
Has anybody got a pen? Yeah, can I have your pen for a second? Because I'm going to write in here the name of a top historical goalkeeper, which I'm going to share with you two, who hated training.
Yeah, you said that to me before, actually.
Hated training. Yeah. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised. I mean, some people don't like the daily training. It's all about matches, you know, and they love the buzz of the games and the bright lights and things like that, and that's what it's all about. That's different mentalities, you know. I've trained with people like that who are literally in and out as fast as they can and love the games, and they can still perform in games, whereas other people are there from first in the morning to last in the afternoon and do absolutely everything and be around that place and love the environment, love the work, and love to train today. So it's just different mindsets, different people.
I understand that, though, because when I was younger, I obviously, you know, going from 16 playing local football to then going to join Arsenal, 6 months later being involved in the England squad, for me...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I was quite lazy when I was younger. I thought that, you know, ability would get you everywhere, and it really doesn't. And it's only probably the last 10 years that that you do realise that. And I hated training when I was younger, especially if I knew that we were doing something where I was going to be absolutely knackered, especially when we used to run. But now, like, I love that individual part of training, and I always get it from my manager, no, you need to come and train with us now. And when they do the group ones, I'd rather just do the individual training rather than doing all of the tactical stuff.
Slipped forward by Tiota into the right wing position. It's Sissoko sliding it to Perez! What a save by Pantilimon! Flying to his left-hand side. His big right hand comes over his head and he fingertips it away from the post. It's stamped out for a corner. It was beautiful.
You are listening to Inside Football, a goalkeeper special with Tony and Wayne and Asmi Begovic.
The next words come from Lev Yashin, the Black Spider, I think he's called in English as well. He says, what kind of a goalkeeper is the one who is not tormented by the goal that he has allowed? He must be tormented. And if he's calm, that means the end. No matter what he had in the past, he has no future. You are tormented by the goals that you concede. You both look like you are anyway every time you concede.
Yeah, of course. I think everyone, like I said, everyone has each individual mentality. I think you have to not want to concede. You have to hate conceding a goal, because that's our job, not to do that. But at the same time, it happens. And I think there's more frustrating goals than others. You know, if someone you know, Cristiano Ronaldo bends the top corner, then there's not maybe not much you can do. So there's just one of those things. If there's a goal that you or the team could have prevented, then obviously those hurt a little bit more. But yeah, I think that has to be a want not to not get beat. That's normal.
You feel the same to me.
Yeah, definitely. I hate conceding even in training. Even my coach, like, I'm always moaning at him. But it's different. I think that you've got you, and you do have to, because you will absolutely torment yourself to hell if you are really so sensitive to every goal that you let in. Like I said, if there's one that there's nothing you can do about it, sometimes you've just got to stand up and go, fair play, like, that was a decent strike. But if it's something that you feel that you could have done better with, I probably almost overanalyze myself. And I will always, and I have to kind of get myself out of it quite quickly, because even after the game, I'm kind of in the game talking myself through it. Well, what could I have done? Where? And sometimes I have to try and get out of that that mentality to just think, right, that's happened now, that's gone, and you can deal with it later. But yeah, no, I do understand that. I hate conceding, and especially when there's, like you said, when you've got players and you're winding up players because you're making their saves, it works the other way round as well, that they'll wind you up when they're scoring, and it almost becomes like a competition within training to make sure that you're the one that's telling them they're not good enough rather than the other way round.
It's like you're fighting in the same team. You, the ones with the different clothes against the rest of them, and vice versa. And on that, I've heard goalkeepers saying that they kind of celebrated for a bit a mistake of one of your teammates because it allowed you to make a save or to stand out. Do you ever think like that?
Personally, no. You know, I think there's no better game if you touch the ball once, keep a clean sheet. You know, that means obviously the as we said earlier, you organized your team well, everyone was doing their jobs, your positioning was spot on. I think those, for me, the best games when nobody mentions you. You know, and obviously we know in the goalkeeping world that every game is exhausting, no matter what it is, and mentally, if not physically, sometimes. But, you know, the best ones when people say, oh, you didn't have anything to do today.
And the ball comes to you, and it's a high ball, and you make one of those mistakes that are with you forever. The goal is because of you. You are responsible for it. Let's hear first from Ter Stegen how he deals with mistakes.
I think you need to see it a different way. I think, of course, some players or some goalkeepers, they take it home. They take it home, of course. Me, if I do a mistake, of course, I'm taking it home, and I say, wow, how could this has happened? But I'm saying also that mistakes are part of the life, and you need to think about how you should improve or how you can improve. And this is what I'm doing. I'm trying to see the mistakes very clear. Like, you see what you did, and this is where you need to work on. And this is what I'm doing. I'm not trying to leave them getting so close to me as a person.
Is there any mistake you want to share with us that allowed you to learn to make a jump in your performances after that?
I've actually got first hand of that this season. We played Brighton in the cup. I actually made two mistakes because of the sun. Even being experienced and playing for many years, like, that did hit my confidence in that game. My philosophy is, like I said, we will watch back our games, and I'll always pick up stuff that might not necessarily be a mistake or anything like that, but I feel that I could have done better and want to do better. And for me, I always go into training and just work that little bit harder, just to try and I kind of try and train out that mistake in my head more than anything. Try and train, get that out of my head as quick as possible, and get into the next game. You never forget it. I never forget the mistakes that I've made. And I think that you probably remember those more than kind of saves that you've made. But that's because we're perfectionists. We always want to improve. We never want to be that villain of the team that you know, the ball could go past 11 people, all of them could make a mistake. But we make that mistake, and it's documented, and that loss is down to us in our eyes.
Can we travel to one of those uncomfortable moments?
Yeah, we can see a few of those over the years, Guillaume. Yeah, yeah, of course. I think, listen, you have to find that balance, you know. And I think because we live in our own little bubble, you know, we understand that's a process. You play a game, you make mistakes, you do good things, you know, and that you need to continue to do, and then obviously things you need to improve, and that's the process that we love. You know, you analyze the game, you work on it, you improve it, and you play the next game and do it all over again. And I think there's, of course, there's mistakes that are more impactful than others. You know, we are human, so these mistakes will affect the result. And if you lose, you feel bad for your teammates, the club, the fans, and everyone. Of course, we have feelings, and you know, obviously as you go older and you get older and wiser, you understand to deal with these things a little bit more. But you know, there's different mistakes. I had a mistake earlier this year, West Ham Boxing Day, absolutely pouring it down, pitcher's waterlogged, they get a pass back, tried to clear it, and I slip and literally rolls to the guy and he taps it in, and you think, well, was that even a mistake? I mean, what was I supposed to do? I wasn't stretching, I wasn't anything, but it's a mistake, and everyone looks at you and you're apologizing for something that's a freak incident, you know. I think, and then there's a technical mistake where maybe you come for a cross and you shouldn't have, and those are sometimes even easier to deal with because, okay, I know what I did wrong. So there's different types of mistakes, different kind of experiences, and these are all part of your journey, and I think that's the big picture.
I think I've shared with you in the past, Asmir, this story of a Premier League goalkeeper who got injured after every mistake. So he made one big mistake. He was injured for a few days, literally because the next day he wouldn't get out of bed. His wife couldn't get him out of bed. It doesn't matter if the manager rang, it's just he will not get out of bed. The second day he will get out of bed, but wouldn't get out of the house. And it took him a while to go back to training. This is a Premier League goalkeeper, and this is the mental strength that we're talking about. Funnily enough, he's now a goalkeeper coach, so didn't hate it as much as to just completely abandon the game. But you must have felt that dreadful sometimes, but the next day you have to go to training, I guess.
Well, I think that again is, you know, as we talked earlier, talked a lot, as everyone is their own individual and deals with stuff. And I know for a fact that when I was younger, I deal with this stuff a lot more. You know, obviously had a heavier burden on me, and you make a mistake and you say to the goalkeeper coach, well, what happened? What could I have done? What was I supposed to do? You talk to your father, you talk to your wife, your girlfriend, whoever it is, and you make a big mistake, and they said 2 days later you're still thinking about it. Whereas now, you know, personally, you get older and things happen in the game. You go home and you have your kids running at you and daddy's home, and stuff gets put in perspective a lot more. So everyone as an individual has these moments and deals with these things in a different way.
Your job has changed so much in the last few years. And I guess both of you have been part of that process where you had to change the way you thought. I remember talking to Joe Hart, for instance, must have been 3-4 years ago. And he himself says that he struggles now a little bit, perhaps, because he was taught as a reactive sort of goalkeeper. That was the kind of coaching that he had, where he was like waiting for something to happen to him. And now the coaching is more about proactive, about understanding the game. Victor Valdez always talks that Pep Guardiola taught him when he was 27, 28, taught him the game. So then he can anticipate and see what's about to happen instead of waiting on your goal line to what's going to happen. So you've gone through all that. You've gone through the playing with the ball with your feet and would have to improve that. Is that part something annoying that you have to change it all from what you learn? Was it difficult? Was it hard?
From when I started, you're talking almost 25 years now. The game has changed a lot. It's part of evolution. It's part of the way it goes, and you go with that. And that's the challenge, is sometimes the beauty of it, and how the game evolves and how you go with it. And yeah, there's definitely a lot of different areas where, when I was younger to now, that just changed. And one, like you said, is the distribution aspect. You know, when I was started, the pass back rule wasn't even in play. So they pass it back to you, pick it up, and you move on. Whereas now, obviously, it's everything done with your feet, and you have to start attacks, and you have to understand the game in a completely different way. So you've had to change it. I've had to work really hard to get to grips with the demands of the modern game and learn and get better and improve, and I have to keep doing that. That's for sure. And like the pace of the game, the balls are faster now. The athlete, the players are fitter and stronger. So the ball travels a different pace. So it means you have to be faster every single season. And then being a proactive, I think that's one of the biggest things that goes unnoticed to the naked eye. It's our positioning. It's our how big are distances to our defenders, you know, whether that's from a ball from 60 yards away over the top, whether that's around the box, slip balls and little chips over the back line. So can you affect the game in different ways? Your starting position from set plays, can you be in a position to be aggressive and put a doubt in the taker's mind? So there's a lot more that goes into the game now than before, I would definitely say.
I've always felt like I've always been a goalkeeper in the wrong era, because me starting out, and I used to give everyone heart attack, I've always been a sweeper goalkeeper. And I think it's always about being in the right team for the right fit. I've been in teams before that I've always swept up from behind and they've hated it. I've never really changed that. That's probably my stronger suit. I would rather, if I think that I can get there, I would rather get there than clear it than have a one-on-one, because that's probably not my strongest area. But one of the things that has changed over the last couple of years, and a lot of it is where I've been at Tottenham with my new goalie coach, is he does a lot watching Hugo, and a lot of what he does, because he's quite small, if someone is to take a shot, rather than, I would imagine with yourself being quite tall and like your presence, you will probably come out to the 6-yard box, narrow it down to try and make the save. Whereas with Hugo, someone will take his take a touch out, and he'll be like, right, okay, well, I'm more effective with this if I drop to my line, and I've got that split second to be able to get across, because he's very, very good at his reactive, like getting across for his saves. And that's something I've had to learn, you know, in my 30s, having to try and learn something completely different, where I'm used to coming in to narrow the angle, to then get in the complete different mind frame to be able to then drop onto my line to make that save. And I think it has improved my game. But it does. It takes so much time. Like Asmi was saying, it takes so much of your time to learn that and try and master that. I think for players, it's pretty much always been fairly the same for them. Yes, the speed and the ability and the fitness and stuff has increased. But as a goalkeeper, if you're not ever changing, if you're not trying to change your game to suit the team that you're with, etc., then you won't succeed.
Some coaches say that actually where they sit in the benches, they don't see much of the game because it's not high enough. From the goalkeeper position, do you see much of the game? As in, do you see enough detail of what's happening at the other side of the pitch?
Yeah, I think that you have a good perspective on the game, and you can pretty much see everything. But a lot of the time for me, if we're in the final third, I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about the striker who is hovering off of my centre-back, who's daydreaming watching the ball. So a lot of the time you are still organising, even though the ball's nowhere near where you are still always organising, always making sure that the players aren't daydreaming, because they do it a lot, to make sure that when it does come over that, you know, they're as organised as possible. And then if I am on the bench, you obviously see a lot more things. And then also if I'm watching in the stands, you see even more. So there's so many different ways to be able to see a game, and there's so many little things that you can see. And I think that your view on it isn't always the correct one. The manager's isn't always the correct one. The left back, the right back, etc. I think that everyone has an area that they know best that might not be what you can see. And I think that's where you if you've got a good manager that listens to their players and stuff like that, and you work well, that can be really positive for the team.
Here's Dan inside the area, knocks it back to Glenn Murray. Great save by David De Gea. It's a wonder save by the big goalkeeper. He spread his limbs like a spider, and he managed to stop Glenn Murray from making it Crystal Palace 2, Manchester United 1. Certainly that should have been a goal. Because of David De Gea, it wasn't a goal.
You are listening to Inside Football, a goalkeeper special, with Tony Ann Wayne and Asmi Begovic. Waiting
At the point of the referee pointing out at the penalty spot, what do you feel? Are you nervous? Are you happy? Is your moment?
Well, it depends what the circumstances are and if you feel aggrieved about the call or not. And you know, I think a lot of different emotions go through your mind and through your body. But ultimately, I think, you know, we're in our zone when we play. You're focused and you would have done your homework before the game about who's taking it, what the circumstances are of the game. So, you know, normally I feel pretty comfortable in these situations, although my penalty record hasn't been great over the years. But, you know, I feel comfortable what I want to do and what the situation is. I always look at my goalkeeper coach and see if he's got any message for me with his hand signals or not. But I'm pretty comfortable once you get into the final stages of the penalty happening.
I don't think you're ever happy. Like Asmir said, it depends on if it was the right call or whether you felt it wasn't the right call. But pretty quickly, you've got to get back into your mindset. And again, for me, obviously trying to do that homework. Lucky enough, over the last kind of 3 or 4 years, especially at Tottenham, my success rate's been quite good. So I probably feel a little bit more confident, and I think that when I've had penalties, when I've had them against people, there's been at points I've saved penalties. So obviously you have that little bit of confidence. But realistically, for a player, you know, that's a free shot on target. So you are in a situation where if they score, they're expected to score. If you save it, you know, you have done what you need to do. But ultimately, you know, we know that's our job. That's our job to get there. And I'm always disappointed any time one goes in, whether or not I could do anything about it or not.
Mental games help at all at that point?
Yeah, sometimes there's a bit of trash talk going around and you're trying to get to the biggest mind.
What would you say?
Well, you say, I know where you're going, or, you know, your parents might be watching, don't miss, don't let them down.
That's a good one.
Things like that, you know. Yeah. Yeah, maybe not the nicest of words I've chosen, but you say certain stuff. Yeah, you get on, you waste a bit of time, go get a drink, you try and delay it, try and tie your shoe or something, you know, just to maybe put a little bit more pressure on the taker, you know. But, you know, I'm not saying it works all the time, but there's just, yeah, different games you can try.
I have to thank you for dedicating this time to us. You came from Bournemouth. You came from...
Braintree.
So it's far. Thank you very much for coming over. But before you go, give me a little bit of storytelling, a little bit of literature. Find me a save, the save of your life. You could be 5, 10 when you did it. And explain to me why it meant so much and what you did that was so absolutely memorable.
Difficult to pick just one, Gia. No, I'm actually not that fast generally on saves. Like we've talked before, it's about a collective result and collective win and that feeling of achieving success and, you know, winning trophies. Those are the things that really, really matter. But some saves, yeah, they feel better than others, for sure. To go in one... Actually, I've gone for my Stoke days. You know, we had the fourth or fifth season in the Premier League, and we never beat Man United. Never, ever. The team, I don't think the club ever had, or maybe for a long, long time. And we played them at home. It was beginning of February. We began the day in the drop zone. Results hadn't gone our way, and it was a big game for us that we had to really win and get results. And we go down 1-0. Charlie Adams scores a screamer. We get a deflected goal, make it 2-1. Fantastic. And it's 93rd minute, Wayne Rooney has a free kick and it's 20 yards out, but put a 4-man wall up, go in my position, and he bends it right over the wall. And I fully, you know, fly at the ball, stretch myself, and the hand is literally in the top corner. And I save that, knock it onto the post. The guys do well to clear the rebound, and we win the game 2-1 and finish ninth that season. So it was one of those turning points collectively as a team. Big result for the club. You know, their biggest rival up there was Man United for whatever reason. And you know, to win that game was special. And, you know, those are moments, obviously, you work for. And those are the saves that we train for every day.
Tony,
I remember
got...
that save. I was watching that game. Yeah. It was decent. Yeah, for me, it's the same. It's to have a game where it's going so well and it's such an amazing game. Obviously, you don't always remember those little things that you do. For me, last year was probably by far the best year that we've ever had. We won the quadruple. And I think we had already won two of the cups, and we were playing in, I think it was one of the county cup finals against Charlton, who were our rivals. We played them about six times that year, and we always play them in finals, etc. And we hadn't played very well in the game. Our passing was a bit off. We looked a little bit nervous, and that actually went into penalties. And it was quite frustrating because I'm not too bad at penalties, but it was always those ones that, you know, I made. I think the first one I got a foot to, and it still went in. The second one I'd saved, but then their goalkeeper saved, and it was the fifth penalty. And I knew the player because I played with her before. And
this is the one for the win.
This is the one for the win, yeah. And I kind of said to her that I knew that you were going to miss it, and tried to get in her head a little bit, and it went to my right, and I saved it. And for me, just to be able to, obviously, I'd done my job for the whole season for us to do what we'd done, but to be able to have that sort of impact on the team and kind of see my team coming towards me that I now class as my family, that will always stay with me. I'll never forget that.
This is Inside Football, a goalkeeper special with me, Guillem Balaguer, and guests Tony and Wayne and Asmir Begovic. None of our guests were eccentrics, as goalkeepers are supposed to be. Perhaps that is another one of the many myths of their profession. Instead, both Asmir and Tony Ann have embraced their role on the pitch with the utmost professionalism and happy with their responsibilities. I think we have heard things about being a goalkeeper that do not get told in a post-match interview. Things about mental strength, leadership, the pain of diving and the pain of conceding. Yes, they did not take the easy route into football, but in my eyes, they are in the most fascinating journey you can take. I am Guillem Balaguer, and this was Inside Football, a goalkeeper special.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.